Hey guys, it's Matt here, and I got a story for you. When I was a kid, I was playing hockey, and oh man, there was this one year, this one team, we could not beat these guys. They were all over us. They were competitive games, though. They were tight, but we just could not beat them. And I remember the last game of the year, it was up against this team, and we were gearing up. We were like, we have to get these guys. When we won that last game, it was so satisfying because we finally got the victory over the team that had dummied us, that had dominated us for so long. I think this is the same thing with sexual brokenness, with sexual sin, where there's been brokenness in our lives and the enemy has come and taken ground and he's dominated us for so long, but we get to make a difference. We get to be part of a message and a mission of freedom. It is such a cool opportunity. So I want to invite you, men and women of any age, to be part of the Action Squad. The Action Squad is something that we're putting together right now. We're looking for 100 people to be on the Action Squad. There's going to be some competitive nature to it. There's prizes. And we're going to work together to help produce a documentary that is literally going to change the world. We're featuring stories of sexual brokenness, of people who have been restored and redeemed, reconciled to God and to people in their lives. And we're going to feature these stories in this world-class documentary that will be a resource for churches to host movie nights, for small groups to watch together, for families to watch and be inspired by. And it's going to highlight the problem in the church, but also show the power of God that is at work when we bring this stuff to light. And so if you want to be part of the Action Squad and help us put this documentary together, I would love for you to go to restoredministries.ca/action squad. You can watch a 10-minute video there that I put together on what it can look like for you to join us in this mission and be part of putting this documentary together. So restoredministries.ca/action squad. Hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Pure Victory Podcast, full of hot tips to help you win at sex, conquer porn, and find purpose in staying free forever. Here are your hosts, Matt Klein and Braden Hafner.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Pure Victory Podcast, better known in these parts as PVP.
Welcome to the HQ, the headquarters.
Yeah, that's right. Tarps, how you doing?
I need to learn to expect that one, don't I?
Yeah, at least for a few more episodes, you know, to build that commonality with it. And then it's going to get out there.
Get the ball rolling.
That's right. Circles, eh? Oh, it's a beautiful February day here. And I hope that you are all doing well. Today, we're going to be talking about something that kind of fits within the month of February. I think this is coming out in February, but if it isn't, it's for February and beyond, I guess. But we're going to be talking about what is our duty when it comes to sex and marriage.
It's good to know you're saying what we're going to be talking about, but I'm just thinking people probably have no idea what you're talking about calling me tarps.
Oh, that's true. Unless this is your first time. Yeah. This is your first time listening. You're like, who are these people? And I don't understand what language they're speaking right now.
Exactly. So we don't need to go there anymore, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Listen to more episodes and you're going to get the full context. That's my challenge to you. And then you'll know what I'm talking about. Anyways, sexual duty in marriage. This is something that we have had a lot of conversations around, specifically in our ministries, but with lots of people, couples, and we would love to just work through some of these questions that arise. And what is our sexual duty in marriage? And there's a lot of nuance to this. There's a lot of ways questions like this can go. We're going to do our best with this because, like I said, everybody has a unique story. But there's a common thread, truth to all of this and our understanding of what it looks like when we're married in regards to sex and what our duties are when it comes to that. And there's been a lot of abuse that's occurred in this area, a lot of demands placed on our spouse through maybe misuse of scripture or culturally some misinterpretations of things that have led to a lot of harm. So we want to try to create some health in this particular area being sex and marriage. So that's why we're doing this one. Because again, we want everybody to have healthy sex lives and vibrant, mutual gratifying sex lives in marriage.
Yeah. And I got to say from the outset, I hate the word duty. In terms of sexual duty, I'm like, that's a terrible word. I don't know what the original language the word was, but somehow in some translations, not all, in English Bibles that talks about sexual duty, I'm like, sexual duty, what a great way to think about sex, something that's supposed to be so
duty.
Much fun and pleasure.
Yeah.
It's just a chore. Yeah. It's a duty. You gotta just do it. Like, oh man. But you know, the reality is people do feel like it's a duty, especially a lot of times wives and sometimes some husbands feel like it's a duty and then it's a chore and it's not good. So that's why we wanted to use the word in this episode, is because there are translations that say that it's unfortunately infiltrated into church culture and society and marriages, where we just feel like it's a duty. And so we wanted to use that and just give some perspective to what we believe the Bible is saying and instructing, what God's desire for us is as married people. And we want to just go through some different scenarios, because there can be principles that we want to live by, but then things happen. And it's like, what do we do if our sex drive is different? What if I want it every day and she wants it once a month, or what if, you know, my husband just isn't into it and I want it and I want that emotional connection and he's just all physical all the time and he's just violating me. I feel violated and there's no connection and I feel objectified. Like, should I continue on doing this or should I schedule it? Should I not? What's the frequency? Mm-hmm. Like, there's different questions that we want to cover. What if there's abuse? What if there's been abuse in your past? Or what if it's your current spouse where there's been maybe sexual abuse of some sort, there's been emotional, spiritual, physical abuse. Should you maintain this perspective that you have a duty to continually open up, to continually strip down and get naked and have sex with your spouse when it's just not healthy? And so we want to answer some of those questions in this episode. And so if that's relevant for you, stick around. If you just want the best sex life in your marriage, hopefully this will speak to that too. And there's also other episodes on that, of course, too. But
yeah, 100%. And so to give you a vision and framework for, I think, where we want to get to before we get into some of those questions, we'll be very succinct with this, but we fully believe that God wants us as marrieds to have a mutually gratifying sex lives together, meaning that husband and wife both are satisfied. Husband and wife both have a connection in this. Husband and wife, both, this is a blessing for both of them. And that's where we want to get to. Also, a very key component is security and safety. God wants us to feel safe and secure in our marriages. And if there's any instance where we're not feeling safe or secure, I don't believe, and I don't think Matt believes, and we don't believe that that's where God's moving us. We need to get on the same page in regards to feeling safe and that we have that security when it comes to our physical and intimate lives together. And so that's kind of where we want to be. That's where we want to move towards. And so that's our framework. Let's just understand that's where it's supposed to be. It's not that sex is just for the husband, where a lot of teaching has moved that way, where all guys were just animalistic. We have these urges that the wives have to meet that for us. And if they aren't, then they're not doing their duty sexually. And that we just don't have as men control over this area. So for wives need to help us with this. Otherwise we're just going to be, you know, doing really bad stuff. So I think that that's a really incorrect teaching. That's a harmful teaching. And also the secondary component of that being that sex isn't really for the wife. It's just for the husband. It's her job to meet that need. And that's what a servant does, right? What someone who submits to her husband does. That's a wrong teaching too. That is so not true and has created a lot of harm. So there you go. There's kind of our overarching understanding of what we're talking about when it comes to sex and marriage. And again, that's pretty terse, succinct, but that's what we got to do because we got a lot to get through.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing that thing about feeling like it's a duty in marriage. I don't know if I've ever heard a guy say it with the sadness and stuff like a girl says it, like a wife says it. Like wives, so many wives feel like it's just a duty. They grin and bear it. They just have to do it and get through it. They just think about something else when they're doing it.
Yeah.
Because they just feel like it's a duty. And it's so illogical when you look at where this whole concept comes from in the Bible, because it's like husbands give your wives and then wives give to your husband. So husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and wives likewise should fulfill a marital duty to the husband. And then this concept is only really on the wife's side where they feel a duty, but it's like, what about the husband though? And if the wife feels that, why doesn't the husband? Mm-hmm. And that shows right there some dysfunction in the marriage that has to get sorted out, because we don't want to have this mentality of it's a duty that I have to just do it. We want to say, I want to do this because it's so much fun to connect with my spouse in this way. And so I want to start out by just saying that in context of this verse that we're speaking from, and then with the mentality of, if you do feel like there's a part of it where there's a duty and there's not much pleasure there, let's take a step back and look at that and go, is this actually what the Bible is saying? Because the Bible is not a book of rules. You're not just simply obeying scripture by doing this when your heart is not in it. God is so much more about the heart and about you prospering yourself and in your marriage and with your intimacy than he is about you doing a certain behavior, whatever that behavior is. And so we can think that we're doing the right thing by having the duty there, but every time you have sex when either you are not into it or your spouse is not into it, there's no emotional connection there, or maybe there's emotional pain. Every time you have sex, you could think, no, this is fulfilling what scripture says to do, but it's actually creating a wedge and you're becoming more and more emotionally distant from each other, because sex that's supposed to bind is now something where there's only or primarily negative emotions there, at least on one spouse's side. And so it's actually damaging when you come together with that mindset rather than unifying and powerful, which it's supposed to be. And so don't just think about the behavior, but think about what's the posture of the heart when you're coming together, and is that healthy? Can you get to a better state?
Mm, yeah, that's great. So there you go. Now, we've had so many different questions and kinds of questions that have been posed to us over the years in ministry. And even in our own lives, we've learned a lot. And some of these questions kind of stem out of our experience too, but what others have brought and posed to us too. But we've gotten the question, what if my spouse wants sex more than I do? What if they have a higher libido than I do and I just feel less than because I can't match up? What do I do then? Maybe you have a lower libido than your spouse and vice versa, or you just feel that there's such a big gap between you two, such a difference, and you don't understand why that's the case. And then both of you end up feeling just very dissatisfied because you're so different. One has a high libido, one has a low libido. One wants sex more than the other. And it just feels like it's this obligation for one. And the other person, maybe has a higher libido, feels like they're constantly a state of flux because they need and want sex, but they just don't want to approach their spouse with it because they just fear rejection. Or they get angry because you just don't ever want to make love. And I don't understand, like, is there something wrong with me? And so there's all these questions that swirl around this area. This is where often someone with a higher libido will go to that verse saying, hey, you need to submit to me, right? And then it becomes about everything, their problems become about their spouse. And then it becomes very outward focused, becomes very selfish. And I understand the pain and the hurt behind this for sure on both ends, for the lower libido and the higher libido. But the key thing is, when it comes down to it, you both want the same thing, mm-hmm. which is connection.
Yeah.
Every husband, every wife wants to be deeply connected to each other. Once you understand, hey, we want the same thing, we're just going about it and coming out about it from a different angle. And once you learn that, you start to have some empathy for each other. The higher libido can start to have some empathy for the lower libido, and the lower libido can have some empathy for the higher libido. And you can start to try to close that gap, start to learn how to kind of bridge that so that you both have a mutually satisfying sexual life together. But getting on the same page is key, because you think you're so different from each other, you start to view each other as other, different. Maybe you feel like you're almost your enemy, right, in this. And when you're angry, I always love this, Cheryl Josephson, the former director of Family Life, she always used to say this, and it's true. There's nothing sexy about an angry person. How true is that? There really isn't. So when it comes to this, what is our duty in marriage when our spouse has a different libido than us? And I think that's a great question. I think ultimately, when we have the understanding that sex really is other focused, then we need to learn to put ourselves in the shoes of the other person and make the argument from their point of view. So for instance, if you're a higher libido person and you're having a fight with your spouse who's a lower libido person, what I would say is pull back and put yourself in their shoes and argue the point from their point of view. That helps you to start to understand where they're coming from. That's helped in a lot of ways. I've heard, even for Kirsten and I, we have different libidos. When I put myself in her shoes and I think of what this might sound like to her, what it might feel like for her, what her experiences in all of this, it has really helped me a lot. Because in the past, and early on in our marriage, I was so myself focused, like I was so selfish. I just so desperately wanted to connect to my wife, but I was very self-focused in that. So then you start to view your spouse as your enemy a little bit, even though you don't want to, you start moving in that way. But when I started to look at her needs and started to become more other focused in a good way, I mean, on what her needs are, I started to realize that she wants to connect to me too. I started to understand where she was coming from in a lot of these areas and how she might feel in all this. And then I started to have some empathy for her. And it actually, that's what actually broke my heart, to be honest. I just remember, I just felt God convicted me so deeply in some of these things. And I remember just crying a bit. I was like, I just felt, oh my goodness, I can't believe I've been imposing something on her that's been so hurtful to her. And I wasn't trying to understand her at all. And it hurt. It hurt me to think that I'd done that for years. And I think sometimes that's where we need to get to. And I hope you avoid some of the pain that I went through with things like that and do it quicker than I did, learn quicker than I did, but start to empathize with your spouse and try to put yourself in their shoes.
Yeah, that's huge. I love that, arguing from their perspective. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. So what if they want to do things? What if your spouse wants to do things in the bedroom that you're just not comfortable with, or you just don't want to do, or what? Or on the flip side, what if you want to do things and your spouse isn't comfortable with them? Is that the opposite of what I said? I think so. Anyways, yeah. You understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So, but, and that's a real thing, right? I would say there's got to be marriages where that's not the case, but in a large majority, vast majority of marriages, there are just different desires and different things. And so what if something, you know, you got to think, are your desires just from pornography? Are they from past sexual experiences? Are they healthy? That's the main thing, is like, where are they coming from? Say they're all godly. Say your desires are good and it's about connection, just exploration and pleasure and just having a fun, adventurous time with your spouse, but they're just not wanting to engage in that. What do you do? What do you do? So if somebody comes to you, Brad, you're the marriage guy. I'll put this on you.
Yeah.
How do you walk someone through that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that there's two categories to this, and we've talked about this in another podcast, but first off, there's a category of sexual behavior that is off limits, full stop. And that's anything that's outside of the biblical standard that God has for sex. So if you're desiring something that's outside of that, and I'll give you an example, for instance, inviting another into the bedroom, that could be through porn. That could be an actual physical person. Of course, that's off limits. That's not something that we engage with because that's incredibly destructive and harmful. That's one class of categories. And there's a whole layer to that of an understanding biblically what it means to have a healthy sexual life together and the boundary markers that God has given us that surround that to protect us. So there's that category. But then there's the other category, which is things that might be like a sexual position. It might be changing up the environment, introducing maybe, food, introducing a toy, things like that.
Clothes on, clothes off, exactly. Lights on, lights off.
All these different things, stuff like that.
Places in the bedroom, the kitchen table, and the living room carpet.
Absolutely. Everywhere you could think of, within reason. then that's a whole other class where there's nothing morally wrong with that in of itself. The question, though, we have to ask is, first off, if you're the person that's not comfortable, I think it's a good question to ask why. It could be from past. Maybe you had an experience that occurred when you were younger that caused some trauma, and you associate it with something like that. And so you don't want to do that. And if that's the case, I'll speak to both parties in this. First off, if that's the case for you, I would recommend being open and honest about that and maybe getting some help and inner healing in regards to some of those areas of trauma. Because we don't want trauma just to go unregarded in our life. Like, we need to bring that into the light and get the help that we need. And I know that can be hard and difficult, but we encourage you in that because it's just going to make your life that much richer and better. Now, if you're the spouse of the person that is saying, hey, I don't want to do this, and you're wanting to do this, the goal for you in your marriage is to create safety for your spouse. If your spouse feels unsafe and with anything, you need to pull back and still have the conversation though, but like, what's going on? But don't push it. Like, so say my goal here is to get you to do this. No, your goal is to make them feel safe. And that's your first goal. So if there's something there that isn't making your spouse feel safe, we need to figure that out. Now, it could be other reasons. Like, it might be more superficial reasons, like, oh, I just don't really like that, right? That's a whole other different thing. There's no trauma associated to it, no trauma linked to it. It's just, you really don't like that position. You really don't like, you know, making love on the kitchen counter. Like, you don't like that. There's nothing wrong with that. If you don't like something, that's what marriage is about. We talk about it. we express, hey, I just don't like it. I don't find it sexy. It hurts. You know, I just really don't enjoy that. There's nothing wrong with that too, right? But it's important to have a conversation because sometimes we shut down something well before we even try it because we just, maybe it's uncomfortable. We won't want to try it. So it's important that we have the conversations. There's so much nuance to this as you're picking up, but you know the inner workings of your marriage better than we do. So it's important that you have that conversation. If there's trauma, we would just say full stop. You know, you just need to end that behavior immediately and then figure out where that trauma is linked because you got to feel safe in your marriage. And then the other ones, well, that just takes a little bit more conversation, a little bit more probing of understanding what's going on for you as a couple. And those are good conversations to have. I don't know, Matt, any more to add to that one?
Yeah, well, I think what you're saying is great because I always think that a lot can be solved through a conversation.
Yeah.
And some of these conversations, they can feel awkward. And so we just don't go there. And for years, we just have these perceptions that are incorrect, but we think that they're correct. So if you want to do something and your spouse doesn't want to do it, you might take that as a rejection of you and they just don't really care about you. And meanwhile, your spouse is like, no, I just feel uncomfortable doing it in a public place. Cause what if somebody comes to our front door what if a kid comes down from their bedroom or yep. whatever, like it has nothing to do with you, but if you don't talk about it, you could take that as rejection.
Yeah. You make assumption. Yeah,
totally. Exactly. So I remember one girl was like, oh, if I perform oral sex, I feel like I'm a porn star. That's what she said.
Right.
Whereas the guy was like, oh, I don't think that about you at all. I just think that this is like a fun thing that we could do together mm-hmm. to show each other love. So that's what he thought. So he wanted it. He took that as rejection until she said, no, I just feel like a porn star.
Right.
I was like, oh no, I didn't think that at all. And they can come together with an understanding rather than just being quiet and not, like misunderstanding each other and leaving things just kind of under the rug. So yeah, just a lot can be solved through a conversation and don't assume for the other person until you actually know. But yeah, we want to encourage you, like, try things, but if you don't want to do it, that's within your rights. Right. And that's totally good. So what if you schedule sex and the time comes, which by the way, I'm all for, if you need to schedule sex, I think that's actually a great thing. But what if the time comes, you're just not into it? Like as a husband or wife, what if you're not into it? Cause that happens. And so, you know, it's about connection. And I always want to encourage couples that are struggling is that you can start with going skin to skin. You can start with massages and back rubs and naked cuddling. Mm-hmm. And it's not all about the intercourse. And that's one thing that I want to say is that it doesn't say you have to give each other intercourse. It says that, hey, there's conjugal rights in marriage. We can serve each other with what they want and with what's good for the marriage. And so if it doesn't end in intercourse, but you're still pursuing physical intimacy, eventually, yeah, I mean, we want the intercourse. It'll lead to that, but that's not always the end goal. The end goal is connection and making the other feel loved and having a greater intimate relationship. And so if you're at that point where you schedule something and you're just like, man, at the end of the day, I'm just so tired. I didn't know I'd be this exhausted, or some emotional thing happened in your day and you just can't get it off your mind. And the time comes and it's like, oh man, like we're supposed to do this right now. I think sometimes it's okay to just communicate again and go, I want to reschedule. I want to rain check on this instead of feeling obligated and pushing everything under the surface and just going, okay, I'm just going to do this out of duty. Now, on the other hand, if you're able to communicate and get your stresses out, or you really do want to connect with your spouse in that way, then to go for it, I think is great. But I just don't want people to just feel like it's just a duty that once it's there, it's immovable and they just have to do it for their spouse out of obligation. If you want to do it for your spouse because you want to, then that's a different thing than feeling like you have to do it for your spouse. And so either way, you could not really be into it yourself. But if you want to do it for them, I think that's great. Yeah. But if you do it out of guilt, then that's just reason for pause.
Yeah, you associate some really negative feelings towards sex then overall. That's the danger. And so if you're the spouse of the person that, or you're the person who, it isn't necessarily that you're not into it. You're into it. You're excited. This is the day, right? And you're pumped up. We're going to have sex. It's great. And then your spouse is really tired or maybe feeling something or going through something. I'm speaking to you now. So in that case, I mean, often we can get a little upset. Hey, we agreed to this. You know, why aren't we doing this? Like, and you start to demand things, right? Like you said that you were going to do this. And I would just say for you in that moment, it's a sucky moment, but what I'd say, just pull back, take a breath, and then reflect, in the sense that you have an opportunity now here to be considerate for your spouse, to try to associate some positivity to this moment. And what can you do in that? Well, like Matt, I love what you said. That is so powerful and so good. Maybe you just need to spend some time giving her or him a back rub. Maybe it means listening to their day, because they're not in a place. They have to unpack some of the things that happened in their day before they can make love or even consider that. And they just need to really decompress. Offer that to them. Give them that gift. Like, sex is really other focused. Love is other focused. So really in this moment, you have an opportunity to do something for your spouse that gives them an incredible gift. Now, I do want to give the caveat. If this is an ongoing, consistent behavior, as it means that your spouse is trying to not ever have sex with you, and just as like, I always have a headache or something like that, right? That's a whole other level of conversation, because there's no connection happening at all. And we need to revisit what's going on there overall. But we're talking specifically in this stage and season of life where you need to schedule sex because you're busy or young children or whatever else. And that day comes and it just doesn't happen because your spouse is too tired or whatever else. That's what we're speaking into here. And it just really is about looking at your spouse and trying to understand what is going on for them and meeting them in that, instead of demanding something. Because I think when you start demanding something from your spouse, especially sexually, and this is, I'm going to just speak generally, often this is husband to wife, more often than not. Because guys, we tend to, not always, we tend to have a higher libido. We tend to desire sex more than our wives. That's not always the case. It can be flipped sometimes, but that's why I speak generally here. If it's not you, that's okay. Just flip this. But with that in mind, like, often what'll happen is the husband will be like, but you are responsible to do this for me. I have a need right now. You know, whatever else is going on for me, I got blue balls, you know, like all the excuses. That obviously is not true. We had an episode a while back about blue balls, and you can go listen to that one. But these are things that we do to demand something from our spouse, and that's not loving. Does that sound loving to you? I demand something from you? That's not loving. And sex is one of the most intimate acts that we can engage in as couples. So we have to be sensitive and kind. We have to be other focused. We have to be moving in that kind of form versus being forceful, angry, and demanding. That's not sexy. That's not creating safety or security for your spouse. So if this is what's happening for you, just use this as an opportunity to actually connect your spouse in a loving way. And then the next time they have associated with that moment some positivity, and they're like, they're way more open to engage physically with you because you created some safety for them. You applied some positive outcomes for them the time before, and now they're way more open to making love, right? So different way of thinking about it.
Yeah, 100%. So what if intercourse is not possible? What if there's some medical issue, which this happens lots, and maybe it's a physical medical issue, maybe it's emotional, maybe there's whatever the case is. There, intercourse is not possible. It's not happening. It's sad. I think that it's really important to grieve that yourself, grieve that together. Because like Braden said earlier, you both want the same thing. You both want connection. And one person might be traumatized by something. It's like, I don't even want that. Deep down, they do. It's the hurt that says that they don't, and the fear and the angst that they feel. But the reason why it's so emotionally painful, if somebody doesn't have that desire, or they just, their body freezes up and they can't have intercourse, deep down, they really want it. But you have to grieve the fact that right now it's not happening. You know, there's other sexual outlets. There's other ways with foreplay that you can pleasure each other, and that you can come together. And this, again, rules out masturbation every time, because it's not about solo sex. It's about coming together. Masturbation is never the answer. If you can't have intercourse with your spouse, you're not just some animal that you can't get off, or you can't live without getting off. Like, you can do it. You can do it. You can live without getting off.
Yep.
The end goal of our sexual desires is intimacy with Jesus. That's the end goal. You can read it in 1 Thessalonians 4:3-6. It leads to so much good stuff about knowing God and sanctification, becoming more like Him and stewarding your body in a holy way. It's the end goal is not a sexual release. And so it rules out masturbation, all of this. But to come back to, what if intercourse is not possible? I just want to go to that caveat, because people go there when they're not having intercourse. I just encourage you to realize, okay, I can grieve this. I can have the mindset that I will be okay without intercourse. but also what can you do? Can you engage in skin to skin or foreplay and still pleasure each other in that way? If that's not happening at all, it's a really sad thing. Just be very, very guarded in your heart towards sin and have boundaries in your life to help that. Because a sexual duty in your marriage, and this is key, is not just what can you do, it's also what you don't do. A sexual duty in your marriage is not just doing it for their spouse, but like, what are you not doing outside of the relation with your spouse? If you're going to masturbation, that's violating the sexual duty you have to honor your body in a way that's honoring towards the Lord, or use your body in a way that honors God and honors your spouse. And so don't go outside your marriage to things like pornography, masturbation. That violates the sexual duty that you have to honor them, God and your spouse, with your body. But there's times where there's trauma, right? There's betrayal trauma is a big one. Yeah. Somebody's watching porn. One spouse is watching porn and it comes out. And the other spouse is just so broken. And there's a popular belief out there. I think we've spoken to it before, but you know, in your journey to, you know, heal from the addiction or from the betrayal, let's take 90 days away from sex. And a lot of counselors will promote this and take 90 days and it's to rewire your brain and get the selfish thinking out of the bedroom. And I'm not really about a time frame. I'm more about, and Braden too, is like, what's safe for your marriage? Where do you feel safe? How do you feel connected? I remember one couple, they were given that advice. Let's take 90 days. Don't have any sex for 90 days. After that, you guys can both do your healing work from what's happened. Then you can think about coming back together. Well, in that process, the wife wanted to feel connected to her husband. And so they didn't get to 90 days. She wanted to have sex with her husband. And they came together. And in that time, they got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And the husband, like, they thought they were done. They thought they were done having kids. Then they got pregnant. The husband felt like he was being punished by God because he got pregnant. And sometimes it's like you get to a point where like, I don't want more kids. I think that's fine. But he felt like he was being punished because he went outside of what he was advised to do. He didn't wait the 90 days. So therefore there was a punishment that came upon him. And anyways, long story short, came to pass, they have this beautiful kid. And the picture, what God spoke to them was the picture of like, this is a picture of victory in your marriage and your family and you guys are coming together. Because in the midst of your journey of overcoming betrayal, they didn't just take time apart. In fact, they came together in that. And I think that's really beautiful. So the mindset is not just, let's take 90 days away or whatever time frame. It's more, is there safety in your marriage? Do you feel safe with that person? So after a time of exposure, when there's been porn addiction or an affair or whatever the case, think about those principles. Do you feel safe? Do you feel connected? Do you feel prioritized in the bedroom? And if you do, go for it. You don't need to wait for anything else. What are you waiting for? If you already feel safe and connected, what are you waiting for? It's actually not biblical to continue waiting just because a counselor said so, when scripture says don't come apart for very long except for prayer and fasting.
Yeah.
It says to come together to satisfy those urges with the understanding that you're doing it for intimacy.
Yeah. And I want to speak to some outside things when it comes to creating safety too for each other. You know, often we think that just includes what's going on in the bedroom, but creating safety overall in your marriage goes far deeper than that. It goes into even the way that you talk about each other in public, the words that you use towards each other, the thoughts that you have, the way that you interact with the opposite sex. There's a wider breadth of how we create safety for each other. And the more that you do that, the more that you choose your spouse above everything else. Of course, God first, then our spouse. But what I mean by that is we're showing our spouse their priority in our actions, their behavior, the words we use. You're going to create more and more safety in doing that. So this really happens even far beyond the bedroom. It's in so much more of life, of how we show that love to each other, how we connect to each other. And that goes very deep. And it's a beautiful picture, really. Like, sex is kind of such an important component, but it's an encapsulation of all those things working together. And that's when sex really moves to a great place, even if you've had betrayal. When you see each other loving one another that way, that creates safety far beyond the bedroom. And then that, when you do come together to make love, it's just a movement of everything that's happening in your marriage. And that's the cool thing. That's where it really gets good. So if you've had that kind of betrayal trauma or other things, think far beyond the bedroom. Think outside too of what's going on in the whole life of your marriage. When your spouse isn't in the same room as you, what's going on in your thought life, all these different things. Totally. God's going to help you there, but totally. Yeah, really, really great.
What if there's been like some people use the term spousal rape when there's been abuse over and over. Maybe it's one time, maybe it's been consistently where maybe one spouse didn't think they were raping their spouse, but the other spouse felt like that.
Completely or raped, yeah.
One spouse is just like, been so dominating in the bedroom and not giving the other one a voice. And it's been it's been over a period of time. And eventually the victim to it is just like, I'm out. Like I'm done. I remember one couple that are married like 25 years and she's just like, I'm not having sex anymore. What do you do? What do you do in that position when that's been the case? I mean, from both sides, but maybe the victim's side, what would you counsel them on?
Wow. Yeah. And I'm so sorry if that has happened to you. Our hearts go out to you and it breaks our hearts when we hear stories like that. But in the case of that, we always say this, you can't control another person. And if you are the victim of any kind of abuse, be it physical, verbal, emotional, spiritual abuse, that's inappropriate. That's should not be called for or tolerated at all in your life. And I know that might be hard to come to terms with because there's a little bit of fear here. You're afraid of standing up for yourself. But if you're in a situation where you're being abused, and there was a couple of nuances to what Matt was saying there. There was a one where maybe you've had trauma in the past and your spouse is not knowing what's happening for you. And they're consistently, you know, maybe demanding sex or whatever else, and are not sure what's happening for you. There's that. But then there's someone who's maybe actively abusing you outside of any of those other things. And I just want to say, if you're being abused, you need to make a plan to get help and you need to set some strong, firm boundaries in your life. One of them might be you have to remove yourself from that situation. God doesn't call you to an abusive marriage. He doesn't. And I know there's been a lot of abuse in the church in regards to this, that you have to stick it out. We don't abide by that. We don't believe that at all. There's moments where, yes, we need to stick things out, but abuse, no, if you're being verbally assaulted, if you're being spiritually abused in any way, physically, emotionally abused in any form, if you're being controlled by somebody, we would just say you need to get some help. Talk to someone you trust, whether it be a pastor, a close friend, someone to make a plan. But generally what happens in these kind of situations is you need to remove yourself from that situation. And we would call for separation and to create a firm boundary of saying, this is not okay. I am not going to tolerate this in my life. And you have to take that stance. And I know it's going to take courage, but we know God's with you. But yeah, you're going to have to take that stance to create safety. The first thing is for you is safety. You got to get safe. Now, in the other case where maybe your spouse doesn't understand what's happening for you, you're still going to need to get some help, but there needs to be some communication. Is your spouse open to having that conversation? Do they understand? Are they willing to try to understand what's happening for you? And these are some questions that you're going to have to answer. We don't know the answer to those questions. Based on the answers to those questions, whether they can be open to you explaining what's happening for you, well, then that's maybe you can move forward. Maybe you can get some help and create safety in your marriage. But if there is no place where you can have those conversations, that's going to be a whole other set of actions on your part to create safety. And if you're hearing the complexity in my answer, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's just every story is different and unique. But the key thing is safety. You're not called to live in an abusive situation where you're being constantly and consistently abused. That's not healthy for you in any steps of the imagination. You need to get out of that situation.
Yeah. And I want to put you at ease too by saying like this instruction to continually give sexually to your spouse, you're off the hook if you've been abused. That's it talks about husbands submitting or wives submitting to husbands as husbands submit to the Lord and love their wives. And like both of us, we're supposed to submit to what is good in marriage. And so if you're being violated, that you don't have to continually go back to feeling obligated because of scripture. And I've heard of that. And that's why I want to say that. And that if you're the one who's been doing that, you have to realize that you need to take some time to heal yourself. grieve over what you've done, actually feel repentant, feel the guilt and the shame, and then release that to the Lord and go through a process of relearning the way that you view sex and yourself and your spouse, and do what you can to repent and repair that with no expectation of having sex.
Yes.
Because there's going to be a lot of trauma that comes back to mind when if you guys come back together, that is very present in the bedroom. And so that's going to be a long, slow process. If that sex life does come back, we believe it can come back, but there has to be a lot of work that is done. And Brad, I thought your answer was so profound. There's so much deep stuff there, but we do, like, sometimes it calls for separation. Well, in fact, a lot of times when there's abuse, calls for separation. And hopefully when you put your foot down, then your spouse will change and they'll realize the error in their ways, because now for the first time they're suffering consequences, and where they've wanted control for so long, now things are out of their control and it might get messy, but it's a necessary thing. There are times where God is saying, hey, there's an opportunity in marriage to serve your spouse sexually, and I don't want you to neglect it. I don't want you to deprive your spouse. I don't want them to deprive you. I want you guys to enjoy this together. And there's times where God is saying, hey, you know what? This is what I want. But given the circumstances, I'm not going to hold you to it, because I want you guys to get healthy and I want you to feel safe in the bedroom so that you can get to a point of there being adventure and there being fun. There are things that you can do to get to a better place for yourself and sexually. And we just encourage you to do what you can. Don't settle for a marriage where your sex life is kind of mediocre or non-existent. Don't settle for that, because there's so much more that you can experience. And we hope that that blesses you and that that helps you. And we encourage you that if you want to see some other episodes or listen to some other episodes on healthy sex life, there's other ones that we've done in the past, and you can scroll through and find some. I hope that that's helpful. So God bless. We'll chat soon.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to hear more, please visit purevictorypodcast.com to subscribe. This podcast was made possible by the generous donations of our subscribers. If you would like to help support the cause financially, once again, please visit purevictorypodcast.com.